The following podcast contains adult subject matter. Listener discretion is advised.
Hey everybody, before you get into the show, which I know you're super excited to hear because every fucking show of Thinking Outside the Long Box is amazing, we want to thank our Patreon supporters, Chad, Ryan, Derek, Doyle, Devin, Taylor, Jason, Steve, and now Christine. Thank you so much for being a part of this show by donating to us on Patreon. If you too would like to support this show and keep it going every other week after every other week, then you can go to patreon.com/TOTLB where you can get your choice of all sorts of cool bonus videos and awesome prizes like hats and t-shirts, original sketches. I don't know if you guys follow Tim Husky's artwork on Instagram, but one of those original sketches got colored and it was fucking amazing. So join us today at patreon.com/TOTLB. And to those of you who are already subscribed, thank you so much. We appreciate you more than our own assholes.
Thank you, everybody, for tuning into this special edition of Thinking Outside the Long Box. My name is Doyle, and on the line with us today is Jason Lyles. How are you doing today, Jason?
I am doing fantastic, Doyle. Thank you. How are you?
Dude, I'm doing great. It's honestly, it's just awesome to talk to you today.
Oh, thanks, dude. It's awesome to come on.
For those of you that don't know, Jason portrays George in the summer blockbuster Rampage that's coming to Blu-ray here on July 17th. It's out currently for purchase on digital download and whatnot, but the Blu-ray is out on July 17th. I had a few quick questions for you this morning, if you don't mind.
Absolutely. Absolutely, man. I could talk about this forever. Great. So go shoot. Shoot.
Motion capture. It's something that's kind of new to me. I think I first got familiarized with the process in the Lord of the Rings, which I think a lot of that goes for a lot of people.
Probably.
It seems to have even evolved since then. The interaction between digital characters and live-action characters, particularly yourself and The Rock in this movie, just seems like absolutely seamless and flawless. Can you describe that process for our listeners a little bit? Like, are you on the scene with him? Do you do stuff and then he comes and does stuff later? Like, how does that whole process work?
Yeah, you know, motion capture, performance capture, like, it's really come a long way. It used to be you had to film it in a soundstage away from set. And then I think it was Rise of the Planet of the Apes was the first one where you could actually take it outside on location to the set and set up the cameras. They're infrared cameras that capture all these dots all over you. So we were able to, anytime you see George, whether it's at the zoo or it's in Chicago or it, you know, wherever he is in there, we were able to have me on set, which was really great. So Dwayne never had to look at a tennis ball or anything like that. He always had me right there. Really, there's kind of like a misconception, which I had it too before I worked. George was my first role in performance capture. There's this misconception that performance capture is something different. It's something else. And it's the exact same. You know, a lot of people ask for like tips and tricks, or they always want someone with experience, which I had never had before George. And I'm proud of my work. I think I did okay. And the only real difference is it's a different kind of camera that's recording, you know, capturing your performance. And so we were able to have me right there eye to eye with Dwayne. And even when George is 35 feet tall, I'm up in a scissor lift with my eyes at 25. You know, we had a huge tape measure as I'd go up and my eyes are at 25 feet off the ground where George's eyes would be. Yeah. So Dwayne can look up at me and act and we can sign back and forth and everything. So
that's really cool.
Yeah. What you see, but then we also shot everything a second time in a performance capture volume in a sound stage for 3 days, three of the long, like the most intense, fastest paced days of my life. Cause there's, you know, you don't have to set up the lights or anything. It's just a digital play space. So,
yeah, for sure.
There's a little there it is in a kind of a big nutshell of how we created that.
Man, what was that like acting on a scissor lift? I can imagine that'd be a little bit sketch.
It was actually, I mean, it was very secure. It was, I heard that was probably how I was going to do it. And I was totally game. I wanted to be there. I never wanted Dwayne to have to act like he was acting with me. I really wanted him to be able to look me in the eye and for me to be able to help him. So I was totally game for it. And it was kind of cool because, you know, you're kind of up there for maybe a couple of hours. And unless I'm like, hey, I need to come down and go to the bathroom or something. So I'm really, it really allows me to you know, I always like to really inhabit the character. So if I'm up there and I know we're going to be going for a take in a few minutes, that gives, I'm totally by myself and can really get into it. And I'm just ready to go. So I totally embraced it. I loved being up there. It's kind of, it was a lot of fun.
That sounds awesome. Would you mind taking a moment and going a little into detail on the process that, as an actor, that you go through to portray a character like George? I mean, like a lot of actors are portraying, you know, people in real life situations,
but yeah.
You're kind of portraying a, you know, a giant ape, which is not something that actually exists.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of asked myself, how the heck am I going to do this when I was first approached? And I did 6 months of research before I got brought in. My very good friend Colin Strauss is the visual effects supervisor. We had just done Death Note together, and he had told me about this and said, you know, I'm going to tell producers you're the number one. They might be meeting you in a week or two. And that I heard that every week or two for 6 months. So I was constantly prepping as if, oh, geez, maybe next week.
Sure.
So I watched all kinds of documentaries, Coco the Gorilla, went to the zoo, behind the scenes. But it really came together when Terry Notary trained me, who is King Kong and Kong Skull Island. He's Rocket in the three Planet of the Apes movies, and he trained everybody in all those movies. He trained I don't know how many people and played I don't know how many characters in Avengers Infinity War, and he's incredible. And his methodology is we are 96% identical to chimps in DNA. So it's not about what we do. It's about undoing all the social conditioning and training and culture and habits and things that we pick up as we grow as people in society. Yeah. And undoing all that stuff. And if we can get rid of all that and get down to this blank slate foundation of a human, we're 96% there. So that's the hardest part. And that's the first week, mainly the first week, just Terry pointing out what I'm doing, replicating it, and showing me what I need to be doing. And really in our psyche, getting to a meditative place, a place of kind of no mind, a place where you're totally engaged in your senses and you're not engaged in your head.
Yeah,
you know, I'm listening with my whole body and stuff, very meditative. That's really the foundation of it, being able to look out of your eyes and hear and feel with your back as not only a gorilla, but as George.
Yeah.
So we rehearsed for weeks and weeks and got miles and miles on the arms in the Santa Monica Mountains, worked with Brad Payton. And then once we had that, I had a couple hundred hours of being George. And so day one, felt like I'd been doing theater rehearsal for weeks and weeks and weeks. I was ready to go. And what I would do on set was I would spend about an hour on the set on all fours in the morning, and no one bothers you. Terry told me, he's like, just if you don't want anyone to bother you, just get on the arms. Like, no one will bother you. You'll look very busy. And I used that. So I would get really familiar with whatever we were going to be filming, get into the headspace, get into the situation of whatever, you know, the scene is, so that I can just kind of flip it on, flip it off like a switch. And whenever they would call for me, I would, you know, Weta would be great about saying, great, Jason needs about 10 minutes.
Sure.
Terry, I recorded Terry kind of guiding me into this space on the last day of training so that I could have it. And I used it every day. And I would walk from the Weta tent to set on all fours as George. I didn't want anybody to see Jason on sticks with dots all over his face and gray PJs. I wanted them to see George, hear George. And I think the first day was like a 15 or 16 hour day. And I was filming with Naomi Harris all day, but I didn't introduce myself until the end of the day, because when she came on set, I was already there and I was George, and I wasn't going to drop out of it and drop back in. I wanted to, you know, between takes, for most scenes, I wasn't like, hey, so what'd you do last night? Like, I was right back to, if you say we need another one, I'm right back. I'm ready to go. So Terry, he really pushed me, and I really give so much credit of being able to really, you know, authentically play a gorilla, play George, to Terry. I kind of gathered a few pieces myself, and then he helped me put them all together in this beautiful picture.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, going back through and, I went ahead and watched the movie again this morning. It is a really great performance. You have the wolf there.
Thank you.
And the alligator-like creature, and that gorilla, I mean, it just seems like another actual, you know, creature on screen. So you did a great job as far as I'm concerned.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah, there were people there were some people that were even at Warner Brothers who I had not met until I went in while they were scoring the music with Andrew Lockington, because I'm just a nerd for music. And I met a couple people, and they said it never even occurred to them that it was a human. They're like, until someone told us, we just thought, you know, like it was just a really, really well animated gorilla. We never thought that was a person. And I was like, yes.
Yeah, that must be kind of what you're going for.
And it helps when Weta does their job as great as they do, and they really make me look like a photoreal albino silverback. Like, they're just, that is like the epitome of movie magic today. They are absolutely incredible.
I mean, absolutely. Even just in high definition, streaming this movie on Amazon Prime, the movie looks fantastic. Like, I can't wait to see what the Blu-ray actually brings out in the individual characters and everything else you get to see. But I mean, just HD, the movie looks amazing. So yeah, they
yeah,
did a really
and they
good
had
job.
Like to really spell it out for fans when you see these visual effects. I don't know what the average number of visual effects shots are in a movie, but it's like half it. Like even for an action movie, it's not this much. There were like 1,600 visual effect shots in this, and usually I think most movies have like a year and a half or so to do that. They had 8 months to do this, and Colin Strauss guided everyone through it, everybody over at Weta, everybody at Hydraulix, and I can't believe it looks as good as it does after 8 months. Like, that's an insane turnaround. Usually you have well over a year for a visual effects heavy movie like this, and they made it happen. And I'm blown away by what they did.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, I think the movie looks phenomenal. And so somewhere, I think I had read that you had really fallen in love with gorillas while researching the part of George.
Oh, yeah. Oh, definitely, yeah.
You want to talk about that a little bit? It's something that I personally want to think of as an animal lover, that, you know, that scene where The Rock saves baby George from the poachers when they're going after his mother, just a little bit of education on what's actually happening out there day to day and how important it is to really dive into that conservation aspect of the film, which isn't a main theme, but it is very much in your mind as you watch the movie. At least it wasn't mine, maybe as an animal lover, but I just kind of want to get your take on what it was like, you know, just learning about gorillas, falling in love with gorillas as you studied for this role as George.
Yeah, I, you know, there are only, I think, about 880 gorillas on the planet. 880, like, that's it. Like, that's not even 1,000. When I first found that out, I didn't realize there were that few on the whole planet. Zoos, wild one, you know, whether they're in Uganda, Rwanda, that's just crazy. And the more I went to the zoo here in L.A., and the more I researched Coco the gorilla, when Penny Patterson, who passed away, was it just a week ago or was it 2 weeks ago?
That's really recent. Yeah.
Yeah. And that just, man, that really, I fell in love with Coco. I never got to meet her, but that, and we share the same birthday. July 4th is our birthday.
Oh, nice. Oh, but, so your birthday's tomorrow?
My birthday's tomorrow.
Oh, happy birthday, man.
I felt a real connection with her. Thank you. I have a calendar with her on my wall right next to my laptop here, but the main thing I saw, and if you watch Coco's documentary, A Conversation with Coco.
Yeah, I've seen it.
Or if you watch enough, or if you just watch little clips of orangutans kissing the glass where a pregnant woman's putting her belly up against the glass at the zoo, they are mute humans. They're all in there, like in every way, in their
For
fears,
sure.
their loves, being self-conscious. They're all in there, and they're such peaceful, loving animals. And when I saw that, like, you know, there was this one moment that hit me so hard in the conversation with Coco when her cat had died and they had to tell her. And the way she takes it is like a human in a suit with her physicality, the way that she's like, she kind of like, she's trying to sign and then she just like, and just kind of throws her hands down on her hips, like, and she's signing, crying, and all this. But then later that night, you can hear her. They recorded, you can hear her in her enclosure crying, going, ooh, ooh, ooh. She couldn't sleep. She missed her cat. And I was just like, this is a human. This is a person who can't speak. And so that just, I saw them in a totally different way when that clicked. And now I see it in other animals all the time in different ways, that consciousness, that life. Not that I think some people think there's humans and then there's animals. No, we're all animals.
For sure.
And in a lot of, and it's a totally other topic of conversation, but in a lot of ways, humans are the worst ones. We're causing the most problems.
We seem to be doing that a little bit, yeah.
Yeah, we're just like, tear that down, build that there. But I fell in love. I just fell in love. Like, they just, I thought I was a dog person. Like, man, if I could have a gorilla, I mean, that'd be a whole problem. But,
A little hard
I just really, I really, And especially with, you know, I don't want to kind of reveal my secrets of exactly how I play George, but in a way, it's like what I was explaining with Carrie Notary. It's stripping down that humanity and playing myself.
For sure.
As a human. Like but like I come out as a gorilla. I have the vocals and the physicality. So it's, I could go on and on, man, but I love gorillas. And conservation is so important. Dwayne became, you know, he adopted a gorilla.
Yeah, I saw that on the Ellen Show.
After this. And I've gotten more involved with conservation with Steve Irwin's family, with the LA Zoo, with Wildlife Warriors Worldwide. I just care. I can't help but care more about them. I can't.
Definitely. And again, that's something personally I want to thank you guys for not shying away from. And, you know, it's something that if we don't pay attention to, something we don't look after, you know, it very easily could be gone for future generations. Like you said, less than 1,000, you know, on the planet. That's a shocking number.
Yeah. Like, I don't want to get on like a soapbox or anything, but like, you know, we're causing a lot of harm and we need to stop that and do things to take care of what we've done. Like, it just makes sense, you know,
sure.
And not take our planet, our beautiful planet, for granted.
Absolutely. Couldn't agree with you more. So something you had mentioned, to jump back in a little bit, but something you had mentioned just real briefly, that you had shot Death Note with Netflix, which and also a great movie, in my opinion.
Oh, thank you.
What was it like hearing William Dafoe's voice come out of what essentially is your physicality or your acting, playing Ryuk in that movie? I mean, that just seems like to me to be very surreal.
Yeah. Very surreal. Like, both roles have been very surreal because, like, I know it's me, but no one's like, hey, wait a minute, you're, like, no one recognizes me. So I'm hiding in plain sight. I remember how psyched I was when I heard it was a possibility. That was the first question I asked Adam Wingard when I got up to Vancouver, like, who's going to be the voice? And he said they had approached him, but they hadn't heard back at that point. And then, like, a week later, the first week of filming, he's like, dude, Willem's going to do it. And just the feeling of, like this, that was my first movie, so I was kind of terrified the first few days. Like, what if I can't do it? But knowing, oh my gosh, I'm going to pass this off to Willem Dafoe in post-production. He's going to come in and do the voice and the facial performance capture. This is going to be awesome. And if they don't like Ryuk, I can just blame Willem.
It's all Willem's fault.
But people really liked Ryuk. But I knew I had a responsibility too. Doug Jones is a very good friend, and he gave me some great advice before that. He said, your face is not going to be on film. Your voice is not going to be on it. But you're going to be the only person the actors ever have to act with.
For sure.
Because you're going to be the one on set. So you have to act as if your face and voice are going to be in the final product. Plus, when we talk with our hands, our body, our necks, our heads, we're nodding, all kinds of stuff. Your physicality is tied into your vocals. So how I talk on set is going to inform my physicality, which will inform how the cadence and the rhythm that Willem Dafoe will somewhat have to follow. So that really, it was great advice that he pointed that out and let me know, like, you're not the face and voice, but you still need to have the sense of responsibility as if you are. And so
yeah,
that really helped me to push. Yeah. That was just so much fun. And I read online that supposedly there's going to be more. I really haven't heard anything about that, but I hope I get to get back into that very tight, sweaty leather at some point.
Yeah, I imagine it's a little bit of a uncomfortable costume, but I mean, your physicality really came through there, especially that opening scene where you see him for the first time and he's standing up slowly as his height grows beyond the shelves.
Thank you.
Yeah, it was really cool to see. Also, just as a fan of the, you know, original anime, it was cool to see that brought to live action on Netflix.
I am as well, and I have to give a lot of that to Adam Wingard. So much of that is his direction of, like, okay, you're going to be here and you're going to stand up like this. Like, he had such a clear image for Ryuk in his head that helped so much.
Yeah, I imagine that would be very helpful. What is it like? You're kind of taking on these, like, really popular nerd genres right after coming out of what, you know, I was watching some of your short films as well, getting introduced to this, the iHelios and stuff, and then all of a sudden you're playing Ryuk from Death Note, and then you're playing George from Rampage, and it looks like you're going to playing who I couldn't find out exactly who you're playing in the new Godzilla movie, but these are amazing genre films, and it just seemed like it'd be crazy to go from, like, I don't know, to me, I've obviously never acted anything, but from going into, like, something, these smaller films into these giant, you know, characters that have existed for a long time and have built-in fan bases already. What is that process like?
Yeah, it really, like, a dream come true, you know, working at Outback Steakhouse a couple years ago and getting to quit and go to Vancouver to film Death Note, and then that leading into Rampage, and then that leading into Godzilla, and now all those are leading into other possibilities coming up. Like, it's really a dream come true that I've had since I was a kid. I've always wanted to be in movies. I've always been a nerd for this stuff. And I've always loved, you know, like, I remember watching The Lord of the Rings behind the scenes and seeing Andy Serkis and being like, gosh, I wish I could do something like that. And seeing the practical effects and the orcs and stuff and being like, gosh, I wish that would be so much fun. And now I get to do it.
Yeah.
So it's really... And it's a testament to, like, you can do anything. Like, whatever you want to do, if you create a plan and you just go after it with consistent hard work every day, at some point, it's going to be a different path than anyone else has ever had, but you're going to get there. If you want it bad enough and you work hard enough and you work harder than anyone else might be working somewhere else, you're going to get there.
For sure.
And so it's, you know, I try and tell people, like, if you have a dream, I'm still just getting started, but mine came true, and it came true from almost a decade of hard work that I loved doing every step of the way. And so go after it. You can do it and have fun on the journey, not just looking forward to the destination. Like, have fun with every success and failure along the way. So I'm a kid in a candy store, man. I'm so thankful and grateful to have these opportunities.
That's awesome to hear. We read the same thing on our podcast. We love to interview and talk to people from starting with the, you know, the base project that they're going to people like yourself who are working on, you know, obviously things they've been in love with since they were children. But, you know, if you want to do something, do it. If you want to create something, just get out there and be who you want to be. You know, it's a great message for people to hear, I think.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. I got one last question for you here. Dwayne Johnson seems to have this, when you watch his YouTube videos and everything, he seems like he's just like a ball of energy, like this crazy driven persona. What is it like being sharing the screen with somebody like that? I mean, like, I just imagine as an actor that must pull like a lot out of you or have a big expectation of you to kind of be alongside someone like that. What is that like?
Well, it's a really, yeah, like that was knowing that I was going to be next to him and knowing that I'm playing a role that, you know, only so many people have played, like, you know, apes through performance capture, specifically with Weta. I knew that I have to hold my own next to Dwayne Johnson in my second movie ever, first movie ever, where I'm not sharing the role with someone like I did with Willem. And there, people are probably going to compare this to Terry Notary and Toby Kebbell and Andy Serkis and Karen Carnival. So I have to bring my A game every single day. I don't care how much pain I'm in. And so it was a huge motivation knowing that I had to do that, knowing that I had to just make this happen. And I had so much support. Like, the first couple of days, they were actually, Dwayne, the cast, the crew, there were some takes where they were literally cheering me on or applauding me because I'd really hit something that time. And it was such a huge motivation and so inspiring to know, like, man, I have so much support and love all around me. I'm doing this. I can do this. Dwayne was so kind and so giving and so supportive every single day. And so I was surrounded by love every day. And it's really surreal seeing the final product because I recognize myself, but I know it's a gorilla. And so, like, it's a very strange thing to see the movie or see billboards or posters and be like, that's me, but that's a gorilla, but it's me, but it's a gorilla.
Yeah,
like,
for sure.
It's very strange. Terry told me, like, you're going to flip out when you see yourself as a gorilla for the first time. And I still flip out a little bit, but I definitely did the first time when I was like, oh my gosh, that's the final shot. Oh, look at that. What? But it's been very surreal. That's been the best word I could use for it. Surreal.
Yeah, I can imagine. I mean, like, just like you said, working at Outback Steakhouse, which is a place I've also worked, to all of a sudden you're just, you know, next to The Rock. It would seem like just a few short years. But yeah, that guy, he seems like a great guy.
Yeah, it's crazy. And he is. He's such a great guy. Such a great example in so many ways. I learned a lot from him, and I continue to.
That's awesome. Just to sell you a little bit and what you're doing, because I honestly just a few days looking into your career a little bit to just see about, you know, how you do this, how you go about doing it. It's kind of been a fascinating process learning about it for me. But what is your next project? What's next for Jason Lyles?
Well, we're looking at a couple different things right now. No, we'll have to wait until they're official official.
Sure.
And then there's one or two that are really big that I, even if they're official, I'm not sure when I'll be able to talk about them. But the next thing you'll see me in will be unless something films and comes out before that, which is possible since it's 11 months away, is Godzilla King of the Monsters next May.
Which is huge.
And I can't go into the details about that like at all, but I am so psyched to be a part of it and to help bring, you know, to help bring some iconic creatures to life. And, you know, some of these creatures have been around for 50 plus years. So
yeah, crazy
that is a huge honor for me. So you will quote unquote see me. I won't be a human, but you'll quote unquote see me in that.
For sure.
And we'll see what else, how else it comes, you know, there's a couple things baking in the oven, so we'll see how they come out the next couple of months.
Well, I mean, I know you're a busy guy, but just to throw that invitation out for you, if you ever want to come back on and talk about what you're doing, we'd absolutely love to have you back on the show.
I would love to, yes, definitely.
Just to go ahead and recap again, this has been Jason Lyles. Thank you for listening to Thinking Outside the Long Box. Rampage coming to Blu-ray July 17, 2018. Thanks again so much, Jason. It was great having you on the show.
Oh, thank you so much. It was so great talking to you, and I will definitely be back.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of the Thinking Outside the Long Box podcast. Join us on Facebook and Twitter to get behind-the-scenes information for exclusive content and to be notified when new episodes are available. The thoughts and opinions expressed in this podcast are those of the individual and do not necessarily represent or reflect those of the Thinking Outside the Long Box podcast, Barron Space Productions, its partners, or affiliates. The Thinking Outside the Long Box podcast is made available by its creators, Juan, John, and Gabe. The podcast is edited and produced by Juan, and Albie is the co-executive producer. The Thinking Outside the Long Box podcast is a Barron Space production.